Hello and welcome to another podcast of Broken But Glorious. It's your host for this week, Nick Davey, and I'm delighted to be joined by Oliver Newman.
Thank you very much, Nick.
Yeah, no Chris Lappin, I'm afraid, this evening. So he's left me in charge to host.
He's just in the background doing the recording.
Any diehard fans remember that I did actually host the first show going back a couple of years ago now. So thank you very much for those who have or are still listening. Very much appreciated. But yeah, our diehard fans, they'll remember I hosted the first ever episode. So yeah, for 2 years on, I thought I'd give it another go. So it's a bit of a special podcast this evening. That's where we get where we are previewing Extreme Rules. Much like our Money in the Bank preview show we had back in May, where we're going to talk about when WWE used to be great, basically. So we're going to be doing our top five Extreme Rules slash sort of moments that we've had over that, well, anything hardcore for that matter, that we've had over the years. Before we get into that as well, obviously a couple of news stories. We'll start off with Riptide, well, indie wrestling, but Riptide. I'm sure those have seen on Twitter, very sad news on Friday at the Riptide show in Brighton. Jack Sexsmith, who was scheduled to have a main event match with Spike Treve, which was going to end them, well, it was going to end their 2 year feud. Sadly, the match didn't happen, and unfortunately, Jack Sexsmith did come out and had to announce his retirement from professional wrestling due to an ongoing shoulder injury. Again, a real, real shame. It's obviously another superstar happening. It's quite often at the moment. I've seen Jack Sexsmith since I started sort of going to the indies back in 2016 and both progress, and he's been a major, major part of Riptide. So I can only, for me as a fan, he's just done so much for my local wrestling company in Brighton, Riptide. It's just such a shame because the company was all built around him. He was at the top of his game in that, and even in pro, we're ahead of him. Obviously, he had a great tag team with David Starr. It's just such a shame. I don't know if you've got any. Have you seen ever? I don't know what your thoughts are on this.
Yeah, unfortunately, I haven't seen Jack perform in any way, shape, or form, live or on demand or anything. But I remember you always singing his praises. You know, every time you went to a Riptide show and stuff. So, and with the guy being really young as well, retiring at the top of his game, is really unfortunate and very sad.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, obviously we all of us here at Broken But Glorious, but also V2 Sport Network, again, just to reiterate, and again, for me, just as a fan, thank you, Jack, and I really hope he doesn't give up in the industry. I've seen him having a few, he might be getting on a few commentary gigs, so it's nice.
I think he's taking on the TNT commentary gig from what I could see on Twitter and stuff. Yeah, he could be one of these people who, obviously, one of the things that he said about him was he was great on the microphone, wasn't he?
He certainly was.
Yeah, that'll transfer over to the commentary table, I have no doubt. And then, you know, the things that he's done in the wrestling industry, maybe he can pass that on to the trainees coming up. You don't know.
No, of course, and that does also follow the news as well that Charlie Morgan as well had to retire as well. Which is again some sad news. Great female competitor, I've seen her some great matches as well in again with Riptide, but against male competitors as well. She was sort of a one wrestler that didn't look out of place when she was wrestling them, and she adapted very well to mixed sex matches, which I think was great. And it's another shame that we've seen her retire. And again, I don't know if you've seen it, if it's all Charlie perform.
Well, once again, this is a young competitor who has done everything possible to build up a name and a reputation. It's just incredibly sad, really. It's, you know, obviously for Jack and for Charlie and Kid Lykos that we talked about, you know, earlier on. It's it's just really, really sad because, you know, they give their lives to this industry by stepping in the ring. Even if it's just one time, you can get a fatal injury or a career-threatening injury, and it's all over in the flash of a moment, and it's really sad, in all honesty, for anyone to retire. But they only saw Charlie Morgan on that NXT UK special, so I don't know too much about her and her ability or anything, but yeah, it's just always sad when someone retires. That's probably the worst thing.
Definitely. Well, that's obviously the start off on that light of retirements. Obviously, something we never like to do, but 100% we had to mention that for two great competitors. And also as well, with the Riptide show, unfortunately, I didn't actually attend it, so I'm afraid I won't be doing a review or anything like that. But a good time to plug my progress review, which is now available as well to read. Or you can go back and listen to the podcast last week. I've done a review on the new Broken But Glorious website as well, along with another article as well about the club reforming. Those who have seen Raw last week, the club has indeed reformed. So it's where do they go from here? So you can see or hear my or read about my views on the Broken But Glorious website.
Fantastic plug there, Nick.
So I'm trying to work out when to slip that in. So yeah, I'm afraid I haven't got it up to the standard of mentioning New Orleans.
That's what I was waiting for. So, but the one other little news tidbit to kind of share. We the Independent is started up with David Starr and a number of I think James Musselwhite as well, the photographer. They've started up this new like indie label kind of thing to try and get the rights for professional wrestlers and independent artists, and that looks really interesting to me. I listened to like their podcast on it and stuff, and it's going to start with professional wrestling, but I don't think it's going to end there. So it's one of these things, if people jump on it in terms of fans buying merchandise and people supporting the cause, then it'll take off like wildfire, in my opinion. But it's one of these things where in wrestling, people have got to let their egos go to one side and work for a common cause, which doesn't always happen. So I wish them the best, and I hope they can break through. And just wanted to get your thoughts on that, Nick, because I don't know if you've come across that this past week.
No, well, I've seen them wearing their T-shirts about obviously supporting independent wrestling, but I know that's been sort of going for a while. But yeah, absolutely, I completely agree. I hope they can get a success out of it. David Starno is one who's very passionate about indie wrestling, so I know. I do wish them all the best. And I know there's been a few disagreements you see on Twitter. I know Nathan Cruz has been a bit controversial about some of his views on obviously on not wanting to go to WWE as much as it used to be his dream, and then big stars like Pete Dunne might have been disagreeing sort of thing, and then defending people obviously leaving the indies to go to higher up and everything. So there's all sorts of that obviously I'll take on it, but I just hope they can get some success out of it. Absolutely, because David Starr is a big, probably one of the biggest names in indie wrestling at the moment as well, when you take out the ones who obviously have moved to WWE UK and AEW.
I think when it comes down to it, just in closing about the We The Independent, and it's wetheindependent.com if anyone wants to check out what I'm talking about, is then not anti-contracts like WWE or Impact or MLW or New Japan or Ring of Honor. They just pro workers' rights. They've been in talks with Equity, which is a UK brand to deal with like unions and things of that nature. So looks like they're building it from the ground up, and it'll be really interesting to see what happens with it, really, especially over the next 12 months, for example.
Absolutely, and we wish them all the best in the world. Try not to say best in the world like Shane O'Mac.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to the greatest show on earth, Broken But Glorious. Welcome to the show.
Right, shall we get into the top five, or our top five moments for Extreme Rules? Obviously, Extreme Rules this Sunday on WWE Network. We'll be doing our podcast review of Extreme Rules next week. My number five is Triple H versus Shawn Michaels from SummerSlam 2002. So it was actually a non-sanctioned fight. But yeah, Triple H, Shawn Michaels, SummerSlam 2002. Obviously, we saw Triple H or Shawn Michaels make his return to WWE. Obviously, we thought he was never going to wrestle again. The storyline, I think, spoke for itself going into it. Best Friends DX.
That was amazing.
Emotional, obviously, comeback, the hug and everything. Triple H then turned on him, and then it was revealed that it was actually Triple H that also beat the hell out of Shawn Michaels in the car park. I mean, storyline was second to none going into the match. Then there's obviously when you went into that, being fans as well, you're still like, has Shawn still got it? What have you? What will happen once Shawn does get legitimately hurt? All these questions were asked, and the match just delivered, didn't it? I mean, there was some amazing spots. Obviously, we saw the ladder spot, which was incredible. And even just the ending was, obviously, I know it's obviously quite a brutal match with blood and everything, but just the ending was just a nice little wrestling move with the counter of the pedigree into a sort of a roll-up. One, two, three.
Yeah.
And then we just had the most, obviously we mentioned about hardcore moments as well as opposed to matches. That was one of the best sledgehammer spots. But it probably is my favourite ever sledgehammer spot with the Triple H just killing them basically from behind. With that wiping him out. And then obviously Shawn Michaels did make his return and to go on to win the belt, the world title belt at Survivor Series that year in the first ever Elimination Chamber. But the whole storyline going into it was excellent. The match itself really delivered great spots. And then, as I say, that ending with the sledgehammer slot was just so brutal. But yeah, that was my pick. And that and also as well, honourable mention for SummerSlam 2002. If you ever want to go back and watch pay-per-views on the network, I would 100% recommend. That card was insane, SummerSlam 2002.
Yeah.
There is, and even some of the matches, you look at it and go, they're pretty a bit average. They were unreal. It was, I mean, that's one pay-per-view I'd definitely recommend anyone who's ever bored on a Sunday night or what have you, and you're like going through your network to watch classic pay-per-views. SummerSlam 2002 is one I'd recommend 100%. Shawn Michaels, Triple H.
The WWE Network, Nick, because a lot of plugs going that way.
Well, I've kept that hidden, but yeah. But yeah, no, that's one match. Yeah, that's my number fifth spot. Getting it's Europa League, which you could even say undeserved. Maybe should be higher up, but yeah, number five, Triple H, Shawn Michaels, 2002 SummerSlam.
Yeah, if we're going to talk about other people's things, then I'll add a couple of thoughts on this. Is the ladder spot when Michaels goes up and like motions that he's crazy and he goes through the table in like a splash on Triple H. Yeah, I remember that. Okay. Yeah, that was fantastic for all the reasons that you mentioned. And then some, just the fact that Shawn Michaels came back, had an amazing match with a broken back that we never thought he'd come back from. So, yeah, just that shouldn't be number five, though. That probably should be higher based on quite everything that you've said. For me, like I said, I've been sticking to Extreme Rules. So I've gone from 2009 until current day. Yeah, my 5-1 is pretty difficult in terms of picking up exactly what I want to do. So I'm just going to go with Dean Ambrose versus Luke Harper in Extreme Rules 2015. In one of the longest ever street fights, because it went over like 50 minutes because they kept on fighting throughout the show. I just thought it was really, really well done. You didn't want it to end because it was just, you know, there was fun to it. There was seriousness and there was just tomfoolery. Basically what the 24/7 title is now, excuse me, and the hardcore title was in the 90s, basically. So, yeah, I'm going to give that my number five. Just if you want to go and watch something that's a bit crazy all over the place, but hell of a lot of fun to watch. Ambrose Harper, Longest Street Fight, Extreme Rules 2015, my number five.
I did enjoy that, but it was just different, wasn't it, with the way that you almost had a match going, but then there's another match going on at the stops. They had a few other matches whilst this match was technically still going. It was something different. I mean, you wouldn't want me to do something like that every pay-per-view, because then it would be boring and stupid. But I liked it, them driving off in the car. And I think I remember JP. I just remember the commentator's reaction when they went back into the sort of ring swipe, which was quite funny. But no, that was that's not different. It did make me laugh from memory. And I think at the time, this just proves though what a wrestler Harper is, and probably one of the most unused superstars. I know there's obviously a lot of political, well, not even political, but more WWE knobs to Harper, really, about him wanting to leave and then him forcing him another 12 months onto his contract. But he is just brilliant in the ring. I really hope when he does leave WWE or what have you, that we do see him have some more sort of hardcore matches or what have you, whatever promotion he goes to.
Well, if you look at Harper, you know, and anyone wants to see if he could mix it with the big boys, go and watch the match against Randy Orton from Elimination Chamber. Was it?
Yeah, it was the build up for WrestleMania.
Yeah, the February show. And then that match should have been a triple threat match between Wyatt, Orton and Harper, and that was his in to, you know, possibly being a main eventer, and they really dropped the ball in that situation, to be honest, because that match, considering that, you know, people weren't thinking it was going to be much, is absolutely outstanding.
It's annoying because I've always really preferred Harper to Rowan. I think Harper's looks more scarier. I think he's better in the ring. Probably better.
I think Rowan's come on a lot though, Nick, to be fair.
Yeah, not Slater and Rowan. I just think out of the two, or Harper's the one who's always been. I've always just preferred Harper in the ring, on the mic, and even just in general looks, he always looks more scarier. So that's just my personal take on him. But it's just a show he doesn't get used much anymore.
Well, yeah, they just keep him under contract, aren't they? So, and then another good match as well, since we're on a bit of a Luke Harper fandom. Harper, Donovan Dijakovic from the When Worlds Collide is a really, really good match. If you've seen that, I'm sure we talked about it. But for anyone that hasn't seen it.
At number four, I'm going to go for Edge versus Mick Foley from WrestleMania 22. Quickly set the seed, obviously, there was just naturally got into a bit of a feud, Edge and Mick Foley, after post Royal Rumble 2006, and led to a classic classic Extreme Rules match at WrestleMania on the grandest stage of them all. And it was just brilliant. Again, I just love Mick Foley putting over younger talent, battling with, obviously, with great talent. Edge, obviously, this is probably when Edge was arguably at his peak as well. And I think this match has just really helped Edge go to that sort of that next level, because he went on to obviously have the feud with Cena that year as well. But this match was insane. And yeah, we go back to Extreme Rules moments as well. The fire spot, the spear through the fire, was one of my favourite spots ever in a wrestling match. So that was great. And to be fair, I think with this match as well, this wasn't one of my favourite ever WrestleManias. So I think this sort of almost gave a positive opinion out the whole of WrestleMania 22, because I didn't think that the actual WrestleMania was that great, in all honesty. But this match was excellent, and it's more so as well for the fact that there was the correct winner, the correct spot and what to do it, but the whole match was brutal. It obviously almost ended a great feud, and then it almost took the feud also, well, then the feud ended, but then it also led to Mick Foley joining forces ahead of obviously the one night stand ECW when they went on to take on Tommy Dreamer and Sabu. Tommy Dreamer and Terry Funk, I beg your pardon.
Yeah.
So it was as I said, the actual match itself was great, but that table spot was what gave it the high votes, because it was just had the classic ECW feel sort of to it that we almost had that lacked a bit. So, and again, the correct winner was what made me give this vote so high up, because, and I think Mick Foley deserves more credit, because he was always good at putting through the young, obviously young wrestlers, but for someone at Edge at this point of the career, it really helped Edge go on to being that major star in WWE. And that's my number four.
I could completely understand where you're coming from. Actually, when you look back on Mick Foley's catalogue of work in the WWE or WWF at the time, the things that he did to create new stars is something that must be applauded, in all honesty. You know, you're talking about the match with Edge, that was fantastic. I couldn't agree more.
Quick spoiler, he has mentioned more on my list. I can see where this is going.
Yeah, so no, this match with Edge is spectacular. One of the things for me was, and I can relay this from my book, How My Lifelong Dream Became a Nightmare. When he was getting ready to go in Hell in a Cell with The Undertaker, Edge against The Undertaker in 2008, and Mick Foley had to like slap him around on SmackDown because he was a lovesick puppy to Vicky Guerrero. And it was just, he's just absolutely amazing in that situation. Going back to the match, obviously, this was fantastic. You got to look at the things that Foley did for Triple H. The incredible street fight from Royal Rumble 2000, the Hell in a Cell match from 2000 as well, No Way Out. But the match that would be there for me in terms of Foley is Foley Orton from Backlash 2004. That was just a masterpiece. The storyline, the way like he spat in his face and he said it was like his kid's loogie or something, and he's like, you know, spit in my face again, and he punched his face until he bled, and then he really took Randy Orton through the ringer in that match. But look how much respect Orton had after it, in terms of he was this clean cut young man, and then he turned into this, you know, legend killer basically because of what Foley had done for him. So yeah, it definitely needs to be applauded, everything that Mick Foley's done for young wrestlers in the wrestling business. My number four is the WWE IC title match from Extreme Rules 2016, Cesaro, Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn, The Miz with Maurice, and this is what I wrote as the after the match, basically. That was an absolutely outstanding match. Four men who gave it their all and left it all in the ring. Pre-match it had potential to be great. Post-match it is a really strong contender for match of the year anywhere in the world of professional wrestling, and it will probably be WWE match of the year 2016. This was quite simply an awesome match that made me proud to be a fan and makes writing about professional wrestling all worthwhile. So yeah, why did I feel that way? Just amazing. We talked about Zayn and Owens against the New Day at Stomping Grounds. That's exactly the way this match started, and it just got better and better. The fans were chanting "Fight Forever." There was, you know, pinfall attempts that were broken up, fighting on the, you know, on the ring apron and stuff. Miz being the sneaky champion, having an icy title reign from the heavens, basically. He's probably been the last great Intercontinental champion, and this was part of his run. The way the matches before this match in particular all led into this. So, like, it was Zayn, Owens, and Cesaro, Miz on previous shows on SmackDown, I think, and on the previous pay-per-view. So it just all came together on that night. The fans went crazy for it. Standing ovations galore. And, yeah, this could be higher, but with what I've got to come, this just has to be seen as one of the greatest Intercontinental Championship matches of all time, probably. And, you know, like I said, one of the matches of the year of 2016. And just a sleeper, one that people probably sleep on. But I tell you what, when we're talking about Nick's plugs for the WWE Network, after you finish listening to this podcast, go and give that a watch and you'll see just how great WWE and the Intercontinental title scene can be.
Yeah, no, it's a great shout. And to be fair, yeah, it was a brilliant. I think also this, it had everything going right for it. We had obviously Owens and Zayn continuing their feud, which was great. They obviously had Cesaro, who was one of the hottest superstars at the time. He was going for like a mental winning streak. And then you had The Miz, probably again, just The Miz being The Miz, great heel, one of the best heel workers in the company at the time, getting the cowardly win as well. The whole main four just was brilliant. I think you've covered obviously everything about how great it was, but I think they also got the little bits right as well. Miz as
well, the fact that we're talking about it 3 years later, Nick, and we can recite it probably word for word and move for move, tells you the lasting impact this match has had.
This is the Playboy Prince of Professional Wrestling, Lance Rivera, and you are listening to the number one wrestling podcast, Broken But Glorious.
Getting number third spot for me, so still Champions League. You don't have to qualify anymore when you come third. So number three is going to be Kurt Angle versus Shane O'Mac from King of the Ring 2001. Obviously, at the time they were going through, obviously just a standard feud, as to be said. Obviously, this was before, this King of the Ring was before the invasion angle. No, Shane O'Mac was still technically the owner of WCW, but obviously it was before the proper invasion line kicked in. But yeah, this was just an amazing match. And this was when, I don't know who deserves more credit, this is when Shane O'Mac proves that he can obviously have his one of great matches. We are going back in 2001, not 2019 for the record. But Kurt Angle as well has proved again how it just immense he is in the ring. That he can also, I think Kurt Angle obviously just proved what obviously just a great wrestler he is. The match itself was incredible, but then we just have to talk about the moment itself with the suplex through the real life glass. You talk about moments when you go, and no, that's obviously fake still, they haven't gone through right glass, then you. It kicks in that, shit, are they actually just gone through proper glass? And then when you hear all the after stories about it, apparently they did the spot, the glass obviously didn't break, then Shane was like, we'll still do it, sort of thing. And when you hear sort of stuff like that, it does give this a good positive Shane that he's willing to put that his career, well, his life on line really for the company, almost in a way. So, no, that spot obviously was great, and obviously, it really helped the match 100%. But overall, I thought it was a really, really great match. And obviously, it could answer their feud as well. And I think it just proved at the time that Shane McMahon did have these really great matches here and there. But I think it also proved that Kurt was one of the best in the ring at the time as well in 2001. And obviously, I know that we did have the invasion angle with all sorts. Obviously, we had some great matches with Kurt and Austin. That was one of my favourite feuds that whole year, actually. Kurt, although that probably was my favourite feud, of Kurt versus Austin that year, which was just great.
That was Shane McMahon and he's just daredevil best, in all honesty. And it gave a new edge to Kurt Angle, didn't it, really? Because obviously he was coming in and he was, you know, the snivelling Olympic gold medalist. And then he's like, whoa, this guy's a badass. Because he's just suplex Shane McMahon through a glass, door kind of thing. And you talk about Austin against Angle being your favourite feud of 2001.
Yep.
Yeah. The only thing I'd say in that situation is Rob Van Dam was so popular during the invasion of WWF. Sorry. He should have been implemented into that feud, and he should have had the WWF title at that time, because there was no one higher than Rob Van Dam in that year for me. What do you think about that?
Yeah, because they kind of touched it, didn't they? I think it was around, I want to say No Mercy time, or give or take, it might have been Unforgiven. It was around Unforgiven, No Mercy time, around that sort of part of the year, where there was talk that Vince had signed Rob Van Dam to WWF, and he was going to, he was going to sort of basically turn his back on the Alliance, and then, because he was in the triple threat match, wasn't it? I think it was Angle versus Austin versus Van Dam, and there was talk that Van Dam was going to win the belt and then join WWF, which would have been an interesting angle to go there. And as you say, it was so over. Maybe they probably should have done, but obviously this is WWE. No, they haven't pulled the trigger on wrestlers here and there. And yeah, sad thing for them.
That was one of the biggest balls they dropped, in all honesty, because he didn't win the title for another 5 years, did he? And that was the ECW title. ECW title that the one night stand against John Cena, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, he won the WWE title, but then they won the WWE title, but then they changed it into
the ECW title.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just wanted to share that. So we're on to number three, aren't we now?
Correct.
Champions League, and you don't have to qualify, as you put it. Yeah. So mine.
I don't think you do. Yeah. No, you don't. It's just forfeit. You do.
Yeah. The way the rules are changing nowadays, Nick, I don't know whether I'm coming or going, mate. My number three comes from 2011, and it was the unfortunate news that Edge had to retire at WrestleMania. So at Extreme Rules 2011, Christian and Alberto Del Rio had a ladder match, and this was when Christian became the World Heavyweight Champion. So this was a great moment, in all honesty. I've always been one of the peeps. Huge fan of Christian. Loved the feud with Chris Jericho at WrestleMania 20. But that whole storyline with Jericho, Christian, Lita, Trish, and obviously the love story between Christian and Jericho, and obviously Trish being in the middle, was just fantastic. So it had been a long time coming, and he went to NWA TNA during this time and won the NWA title. So he had become world champion before, but this was his him finally getting his due in WWE. The match was, the match was good, but it was all about the moment, really. Christian, not 300 pounds, and just a normal size guy with a lot of ability, both on the microphone and in the ring, finally reaching the mountaintop, and it was really cool.
Yeah, I thought that was definitely Christian's peak of his career. Obviously, Chamber Edge, but what an emotional moment when Edge was still there, seeing his best friend win his first ever title. I think WWE got that to perfection, and then. Obviously, then 5 days later, and lost the belt to Orton on SmackDown, and that started what was my favourite feud of that year, 2011, Orton versus Christian. That was an insane feud. Great rivalry.
That's what I forgot to mention. But I don't think it's your favourite feud of 2011, because this is the same time when Punk and Cena were feuding.
I know it was kind of a feud, but that was more Punk's feud with WWE, really. I mean, it was like two personal individual feuds. That was a great rivalry. I mean, Punk was more of my favourite storyline of the year, but when you go down to the feud of people who actually just want to beat the crap out of each other, Orton and Christian was brilliant. And the story I'm telling, it gave you a reason to actually watch SmackDown, because I thought back in 2011 was actually a really good year for WWE.
You got Christian and Orton fighting on SmackDown, and Punk against WWE on Raw.
All the pay-per-views that year seem to be have a point to watch as well. Every pay-per-view, there wasn't one where you go, well, there's not really any reason to watch it. They all were almost unmissable in a way. So, Christian, it started with Christian as into a very good heel year for him. But obviously he had his emotional, lost it, and had a great obviously just had a great end to the year and some great, great matches with Randy Orton.
Yeah, and the highlight of the matches against Randy Orton is the one where he forced him to be disqualified and won the title back. That was genius psychology. Absolutely amazing.
That was Money in the Bank. They had an amazing match over the limit. Then they had, obviously, a great match as well, Capital Punishment. But I think at Capital Punishment, it was where Christian had his leg underneath the rope. Then I think Money in the Bank, there was Christian put all sorts of, after getting his lawyer involved, put all sorts of stuff on the match that if Orton gets disqualified or if there's a referee makes an error or what have you, I win the belt or something. And then, yeah, he said he sort of captured it in a very hilly way. Then they had an amazing No Holds Barred match at SummerSlam 2011, which I know it's a bit early for our honourable mentions, but I'm afraid it hasn't made my list. But this is a great honourable mention because this was a great match. And I know they've talked about this before on Steve Austin's podcast when they were talking about Edge and Christian's favourite single matches, and I think they had to guess, and I think Edge naturally guessed Del Rio's ladder match, and I think Christian said this was actually his favourite match, which was just amazing. I think Austin gave it good praise as well.
Yeah. Now, when you look at it that way, Nick, I want to say one thing. Fair play to you for remembering the name of pay-per-views and stuff from 2011. That's impressive.
I'm a sad man.
No, you're not. You've just rolled off four different pay-per-views with Christian against Randy Orton. And once again, it was simplistic. The art of storytelling in professional wrestling is simplistic. You do a simplistic story and you keep on building on it. And that has been the case for, you know, decades. The very best storylines are simplistic in their nature. And, yeah, that led to some brilliant matches. And Christian was a fantastic, sneaky, snidey world heavyweight champion, and I loved every second of it.
I think as well, it's not to try and justify myself, the reason I know 2011 was such a big year that I watched wrestling, but it's also you're at that stage when you're at college where you're basically nothing, you're actually in for a few hours a day and you've got loads of time on your hands, stuff that I don't have these days, but so that's why I just watched so much wrestling back then. And now it's before I even watched any indie. That's when I was literally just WWE back then as well. But I think as well, I had loads of time on my hands, and it was actually good to watch back then as well with the whole CM Punk angle, Randy Orton, Christian. But
yeah,
above all, I just had a lot of time on my hands.
You're a wrestling fan, I don't blame you.
And it was also an over, because I had a bit of a, not a hiatus, but I wasn't watching it as dearly. It was 2010 when I kind of got back into it around WrestleMania, that WrestleMania time, and then I sort of just continued, fell back in love with it.
If you're sad for having too much time on your hands, Nick, I've written about professional wrestling for the last 15 years, and I've wrote 3 books, so, you know.
No,
I'm never going to say you're sad when it comes to that. We're wrestling fans. We just enjoy it. It's all good.
Enjoy the beautiful sport.
Exactly.
All right, number two. They definitely don't have to qualify for the Champions League. They've got the spot. They're just unlucky. They haven't won it. And they might even get a Community Shield if number one wins the FA Cup as well. I'm going to, funny enough, you've already mentioned it, I'm going for Randy Orton against Mick Foley at Backlash 2004. Exactly. As soon as you said it, I couldn't really give you a stare and do a, you know, and you sort of look when someone's about to sort of say something in front of someone like, oh yeah, so and so kissed so and so the other night, and then you have to do a discreet look of, don't say that.
Yeah. It'll be impressive to see if you can vary your answer from what I said.
Well,
no pressure, Nick.
Concept of the story, I think you kind of covered it. Back in, I know it was at the time when Mick Foley was general manager of Raw, but then I think he was given a match with Orton if Mick Foley had won. Because I think he was joint general manager, wasn't he, at the time of Bischoff, I think. I think if Mick Foley had won the match from Raw. This was towards the end of 2003, because after Austin got kind of fired in storyline after Survivor Series. So I think if Mick Foley had beaten Orton, Mick Foley would become solo general manager of Raw and Bischoff would be out. But then if Orton beat Foley, then obviously Foley would be out and Bischoff would be solo general manager. But I don't think the match ever happened. Foley walked away. And then, yeah, you're right, Orton spat in his face and then started talking trash about Foley for the next sort of month. Which was great heel work, by the way, and this really did cement Orton to the next level. Then I remember at Royal Rumble 2004, Foley made a surprise return and eliminated Orton from the match, which was great because Orton was going through that match really well at the time. Then, obviously, it came to WrestleMania where Foley and The Rock lost to Evolution. And again, I think the story again was Orton was the big... They made it all about Orton, which was the tactical thing to do. And then that brought us to Backlash 2004, where it was great storytelling. Some of the promos in this were insane. You've covered, obviously, my favourite ones. But the whole storyline was just brilliant. Foley sent out saying, you can become a legend. Face me in a hardcore match for the title. But Evolution banned from ringside and everything. Great. Then also you had that backstage segment where it was a bit sort of, especially for me, I was quite young at the time, it was a bit unsettling watching this when Foley was got his barbed baseball bat out and was saying, I'm going to be Cactus Jack. He was basically saying he's going to be Cactus Jack for the fight. So, yeah, when I say Mick Foley, I didn't mean Mick Foley, I meant Cactus Jack against Randy Orton. Yeah, he was basically just smashing the life out of everything in a backstage room, which was great. I think even like the people, even like the backstage crew, like Mick, calm down, sort of thing, which was just sold it. Little things like that just sold it brilliantly. And then, yeah, the match itself, I mean, there were so many spots. There was even so many just casual spots. I mean, the casual spot was when Foley just decided to throw Orton off the stage and dive off himself, like, which was just mental in itself.
Yeah.
Yeah, the thumbtacks as well with RKO and then Foley throwing him onto there. And then, yeah, the arc at the end onto the table, which was barbed wire table, which was the perfect way to end it. And as you say, again, we talked about earlier with Edge, this was took Orton to that next level, that he could hang with the big boys. He was going for that Legend Killer gimmick at the time, which I think is brilliant, which I thought was one of the best angles WWE have ever done with a young up-and-coming star. It really, that mould was just so good at the time, because I loved his feud with Shawn Michaels as well. But this was just a great match. And yeah, Mick again pushing Orton, getting Orton over. And then obviously later on that year at SummerSlam, Orton went and obviously won the WWE title. It was just given to him in the main event, one unknown wrestler for the world title. In the main event of SummerSlam, it was Orton versus it was Orton versus Chris Benoit, and he won the title. Hello?
Become the youngest world heavyweight champion signed in there.
But obviously WWE was cut that out because of who he faced. But it cemented Orton's career and it took him to that next level. And what I really hope they do with Orton now, I kind of want them to go through a new gimmick of not Legend Killer, but the opposite. Basically, next, like NXT killer or something. Like, he could have so many great feuds where he just tries to basically, kill the up and coming stars. No, then you say, well, what's the point of that if you're trying to put like, over the young talent? But then it's just a nice, you could have it just as the angle. He doesn't have to win every match, but obviously, you could have him in great matches with like Ricochet, Andrade, Aleister Black. The list goes on, really, of wrestlers he could face and from who come up from NXT.
Yeah, that's a good shout. I don't really have too much to add to this, in all honesty, because I accidentally added my thoughts earlier. So, my number two is the first match that was probably a breakaway from the PG era, because this one had blood, grotesque violence, brutality. This was Lesnar's first match back, if I remember correctly.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, and this is just an outstanding fight, really. Very much like if it was UFC and WWE, the way Lesnar was just, you know, smashing Cena, basically, with his new get-up of the, you know, the UFC trunk, shorts and gloves and stuff. So, yeah, this was fantastic. Yeah, just really enjoyable from start to finish. Brilliant non-PG match for all the people who want the Attitude Era to come back and realize, and they don't realise that a lot of the matches in the Attitude Era were terrible. It was just the fact that everyone had the character and a personality that made it so, you know, that made it such what it was. So, yeah, this was tremendous from start to finish, and proof that John Cena can go, you know, when he wants to, when he's got the right opponent, and proof that Lesnar can thrive in any kind of atmosphere, really. Obviously, just come back from the UFC at this point, so yeah, really, really, really good, and I think well worthy of being my number two.
Yeah, I this was actually going to be one of my honourable mentions, so it's, no, great, I think you've hit the net very correct, saying it was WWE, sort of, it was a good shock at the time, when you saw blood, you sort of panicked, but as you say, the manner in which we saw blood, it wasn't just a standard little cut open by mistake, it was, yeah, very, very brutal, and I think it was at the end when Cena cut that almost odd promo, it was almost like he's going to get in trouble for bleeding, the sort of thing that maybe they shouldn't have done that, if that makes sense. So, but that was great. And again, it really did have, I know Brock lost, but they almost brought, I mean, that was the only error. They should have probably had Brock win, because he looked such a beast throughout. I know, obviously, going forward, it was okay after they did sort themselves out, but it would still be, I think Brock should have still won.
Yeah. I see what you're saying there. To be honest, I just remember the match. I didn't remember the outcome. It's one of those matches where I don't think anyone lost by losing. But
yeah, I think still had the wrong winner. It was like a punch to the face with the Cena's with the necklace sort of thing, or just it was a punch to the face with that.
This is the Monster of Baden, the biggest masked member of the Rejected, and you're listening to Broken but Glorious.
Number one, so my champion, who's definitely got a Champions League spot, it is, again, we've already touched it, but it's Mick Foley or Cactus Jack versus Triple H Royal Rumble 2000.
Sorry, Nick.
I was sort of, yeah, still a kind of a fan at this point. I was only very young, so I was kind of getting into it. But, yeah, I mean, this match, people still go, I think when people are still remembering about it to this day, 19 years ago, Sykes obviously right, and we've obviously mentioned about him pushing on Edge and obviously Randy Orton. This has made Triple H the star. And already at this point, Triple H was one of the best in the business. This just proved that he probably was one of the best, if not the best in the business at this present stage. He had everything, and Foley just really helped. And this match was obviously amazing. And I just wish, yeah, again, we talk about going back and watching matches on the network. If you haven't watched this, please, please do, because it is just fantastic in every aspect for a hardcore match. And it's why it's rightfully my number one. Everything about it was just superb. There were some brutal shots. They literally brought all around Madison Square Garden. And I think as well, Royal Rumble 2000 was just a great pay-per-view as a whole. And with the, obviously, you had the Hardys versus the Dudleys as well, which was a brilliant match. You had the Rumble itself, which was great, albeit a bit of a botched finish. But no, the actual match itself was brilliant. And obviously, the feud even moved on to an even better match at No Out, arguably, in the Hell in a Cell, which he saw the so-called end of Foley's career. Then obviously, yeah, the disaster that was WrestleMania 2000, whatever you want to call it, which was less said about that, the better. But no, the actual Royal Rumble, great. And as I say, still going on about it now. People still, casual fans still go, oh, I'll never beat the days back when it was Royal Rumble 2000 of Foley versus, or Catch a Triple H. Even when there's Royal Rumble comes around every year, you can't help but mention it. So it's rightfully my number one.
Yeah, so that's just a fantastic match. Beautiful in its artistry. Psychology-wise, it's incredible. From a brutality perspective, it is up there as one of the most brutal matches of that era. So I completely understand why it's number one, and one of my favourite matches of all time. In a really great feud where once again Mick Foley, Cactus Jack helped a younger guy get popular with the audience and reach that next level. So obviously he did his job to perfection. If not, hopefully he hasn't shortened his life by a few years by doing all these crazy matches. Yeah, so to my number one, and if you know me by this point, which hopefully you do, the 15 years and the 3 books later, my number one is when CM Punk cashed in on Jeff Hardy after the Edge Jeff Hardy ladder match. And I know you might think, and you'd be right in saying so, I said this as being one of my moments on the Money in the Bank podcast. But yeah, this was so good that I'm going to say it again, basically. Obviously, the moment was amazing because, winning Money in the Bank 2 years in a row to steal a Nickism, I'm going to give you that. I was at WrestleMania 24 when CM Punk won Money in the Bank, had a match for the first time. And that's in my book. How my lifelong dream became a nightmare. Available on paperback and Kindle. we'll add in the links afterwards. The cash in was fantastic because Jeff Hardy had just gone through hell to be Edge in this ladder match for the World Heavyweight title. The storyline between Punk and Jeff Hardy was so real because Hardy had his troubles with alcohol and drugs, and CM Punk is straight Edge, and this was the best of CM Punk in the WWE up until the pipe bomb in 2011. So yeah, if you're looking for things to watch on the aforementioned WWE network, go back and watch from when Punk cashed in on Jeff Hardy, which I believe was the 1st of June 2009, up until the cage match on SmackDown after SummerSlam, and you'll just see just genius storytelling, once again simplistic in nature, and just brilliant matches, brilliant storytelling, brilliant psychology, just amazing to watch, and that's why it's my number one. Are we going to say about the honourable mentions, Nick? Have you managed to come up with 5, or just one more to take the floor?
I'll just go for one honourable mention. One honourable mention is a triple threat match at WrestleMania 17, Raven versus Big Show versus Kane. Simply because I loved WrestleMania 2017, it was my favourite ever WrestleMania, and I thought the hardcore match just added to the card a lot, and it was what I kind of want WWE to be like this day with the 24/7 belt. So it just had the feel. It was everything right of that hardcore feel at the time. So. And I found it almost a bit quite funny as well with some of the backstage segments as well. So really just a good hardcore match. That's my honourable mention.
Okay, I'm just going to go with the one honourable mention as well, Nick. We'll wrap this up. Chris Jericho and Rey Mysterio's feud over the IC title in 2009 is so underrated, it's not even funny. I'm not sure if this is the best match of the feud, but I'm going to go with the no-holds-barred match, Jericho Mysterio IC title from Extreme Rules 2009. Just the chemistry between the two. Once again, the simplicity in the feud. other points, Mysterio's mask was on the line and things of that nature. So, just Jericho and Mysterio in a wrestling ring, given, I think, 15 minutes plus, and they just turned it into magic, as you would imagine, given the talent involved.
I agree. CM Punk Jericho was,
that's CM Punk Jericho, Nick. It was Rey Mysterio Jericho.
Sorry, Rey Mysterio Jericho. Yeah, no, I did enjoy that feud as well with the whole mask and everything. And that was a really good match. And again, I think it proved as well, Jericho could literally wrestle anyone. And
Mysterio, in all honesty, Mysterio is the greatest masked wrestler of all time. And considering how many like knee operations and stuff he's had, and you know, even to this day, the matches he's had with Andrade and Samoa Joe on SmackDown before the draft, just amazing matches. But the one standout moment for me was, I believe, Jericho trying to take off Mysterio's mask, and he got the mask off, but Mysterio was wearing another one, and that's how he got pinned.
Yeah, no, I do remember that now. Something just rubbed my face, but yeah, no, I do remember that. It was great. It was a really good feud as well at the time. I think 2009 was a bit of an iffy time for WWE, shall we say. I think there was certain individuals that did save it, and I think this is one of the feuds that certainly was more than up. I think SmackDown was a lot better than I think SmackDown in 2009 was what carried WWE, in all honesty, with the CM Punk Jeff Hardy feud with Jericho and Mysterio. I think SmackDown in 2009 was dicked over Raw, to be honest, that year, because Raw wasn't great.
Very good.
Hello everyone, this is the interview queen Alicia Too, and you're listening to me on Broken But Glorious.
Okay, so we'll go from number 7 to number 1. Aleister Black against To Be Announced. Who do you think this is going to be, first of all, and how do you see his match going?
I think it'll be Cesaro. I think it'll be someone like that. I think he's been rumoured, and I think Aleister Black.
Okay, so I think it's going to be Randy Orton, because they've been doing house show matches, and Aleister Black will win, getting the biggest win of his career in WWE this far. Okay, next match is The New Day, Heavy Machinery, Daniel Bryan and Rowan.
I'd like it to be Heavy Machinery, but I think it'll be Daniel Bryan and Rowan. I think they need to keep them on them a bit more. Daniel Bryan and Rowan.
I want it to be on Daniel Bryan and Rowan, because they're bringing their prestige back to the tag team division again. The promos and the match quality is up there. It's been really good since they've become the Planets tag team champions, so long may it continue. The next match is for the Cruiserweight title, and it is the former champion, the premier athlete, Tony Nese, against Drew Gulak.
You won't take it off Gulak this early, so yeah, Drew Gulak.
Yeah, and I believe the same, Drew Gulak, because he's been one of the most consistent wrestlers on 205 Live, and it's great to finally see him, you know, get a breakthrough to become the champion. And long may he reign. The next one's for the SmackDown Women's Championship, and it is Alexa Bliss with probably Nikki Cross by her side against Bayley.
I think Bayley, and I think it will be the one where Bayley actually does hit her with the kendo stick to remove the demons. Or 2 years ago, I think it was, at Extreme Rules. So I hope they do make it a kendo on a stick match. Bayley's my pick.
Yeah, kendo on a pole match.
Kendo on a stick.
Kendo on a pole. No, I looked at that when I was looking to do my research on the Extreme Rules pay-per-views, and that's one that came up. I think this one might go to Alexa Bliss because of Nikki Cross, but I think down the line we're going to have the situation where Nikki Cross finally realises she's being used. So that's been a really interesting story to see unfold. as the weeks have gone by. Next match is the WWE Championship match. I'm hoping it's going to go in front of number two, but I don't think it will. And it is Samoa Joe against Kofi Kingston.
So I don't want Joe to lose again, but then I don't want Kofi to lose the belt yet. So it's a bit of an awkward one, but yeah, I think Kofi will win.
See, for me, there's been we talk about pulling the trigger on a superstar that's popular. Samoa Joe for me falls into the Rob Van Dam category. He should have won the title. The Great Balls of Fire, was it? I remember, against Brock Lesnar.
Yeah, that was 2 years ago. Yeah, around this weekend. So it was around this sort of time 2 years ago.
Yeah, he should have won the title then, and he should have won it since. I'm hoping against hope that he wins it this Sunday. Nothing against Kofi Kingston, who's fantastically entertaining and a really, really good wrestler. But I just love Samoa Joe, everything he stands for. I've said it, he's one of my favourite wrestlers of all time. He was inside my top 10 of all time. So, yeah, I'm hoping he gets that WWE Championship, really. That'd be fantastic. The next match is The Undertaker and Roman Reigns versus the aforementioned Shane McMahon and Drew McIntyre.
I think it'll be Taker and Reigns. I think it'll be Taker and Reigns. Not sure how I feel about this match. It's been a bit weird, just weird, I think is the way to put it. But I hope it's Undertaker Reigns, and then slowly we can just see Shane have a break from TV because it's getting a bit too much, I think. So, Undertaker and Reigns for me.
When you look at the storyline, Reigns was, one of the last people to beat the Undertaker, and he showed respect to him. So it does make sense that he would be there for him if he needed it. And then, obviously, during the handicap match, he came out and he saved him, kind of thing. So I'm thinking, The Undertaker and Roman Reigns, much like yourself, and I'm hoping that this leads to Undertaker versus Drew McIntyre at SummerSlam, and Drew McIntyre wins that match. And I'm guessing at SummerSlam will be Reigns versus Shane McMahon, and then hopefully Reigns wins that match and we put an end to all of this, basically.
Yeah, I agree with that.
You'd be on board with that, wouldn't you, Nick?
Absolutely.
Yeah, and the main event is a last chance winners take all mixed tag team Extreme Rules match for both the WWE Universal Championship and WWE Raw Women's Championship, where Seth Rollins and the Man Becky Lynch are taking on Baron Corbin and Lacey Evans.
Seth Rollins and the Man Becky Lynch.
Yeah, this one's a difficult one to call, to be honest, because they've been bigging up Corbin, they've been bigging up Lacey, and then she's lost on two straight shows against Becky Lynch, which doesn't make sense if you've built somebody up. Well, that's what they've done. I could see them winning nefariously, because they've been saying about Corbin and stuff. But I'm hoping it stays on Seth Rollins and Becky Lynch. And just a quick follow-up question with this. Just with the WWE title and the Universal title, the Raw Women's Championship we'll go with. Okay, so after this pay-per-view's over, we are on the road to SummerSlam. Who is Seth Rollins' next challenger?
Baron Corbin.
We can come back to that another time, come on, Nick.
I was thinking Drew, but he's obviously I feel like I prefer your idea of him playing, taking Undertaker.
If he beats the Undertaker, then he's on to Rollins, and then he beats him, and he's a made man, isn't he?
Yeah, maybe. I'd like to see maybe some sort of tournament to crown who faces him. Lars is obviously out, so it won't be Lars.
The wild card rule's still in effect, so could it be someone from SmackDown?
Maybe Andrade. It could be, yeah. They've got their tag match on Raw this week, so yeah.
AJ Styles could be one when he's backed up by the club.
Yeah, could be the club, or some AJ Styles, I should say. I'll go with Andrade.
Yeah, okay, that's a good shout. Or Finn Balor, and we'll do 3 years in the making to the rematch.
Oh, yeah.
Who do you think will be Becky Lynch's next opponent?
I want to say Rousey, but I don't think it will be, so I'll go for... it's not to be who's even on the roster these days.
Considering how much Rousey's missing wrestling, according to that YouTube video that I said,
stick my gun, I'll say Rousey.
I'm going to go with Sasha Banks. She's got to come back at some point, if she does. Last one is WWE Championship, if Kofi Kingston retains.
I reckon I'm going to still stick with a triple threat match with the New Day.
Okay. I'm going to go with... Jeez, this is where the wild card rule really screws you up, doesn't it? I don't know, maybe Cena. Cena comes back.
Yeah. For
SummerSlam. So, yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, that concludes another great show. Obviously, the Extreme Rules preview, you can see Extreme Rules this weekend. So, podcasts will be available next week. So, I'm sure it'll be 1, 2, maybe even 3. I don't think it'll be that much. But, yeah, Evolve 100, AEW Fight for Fallen, and WWE Extreme Rules. So, lots of wrestling coming over the next month. Obviously, I've got SummerSlam next month as well as All Out. So, lots coming soon. Obviously, a podcast every week. Started moving to doing one a week. Plus,
with everybody.
plus interviews as well. Yeah, lots of interviews as well. So, again, keep an eye out on the new website, Broken But Glorious website. As I say, lots of content, lots of articles all on there. So, the latest one is one about the club reuniting and where they go from here. So, please keep supporting us. And thank you very much for listening. And good evening, and good night.
Good night, everyone. And we'd just like to give a huge shout out to our sponsors, PowerSlam TV. If you use the Broken Free code, you get a free month of one of the best subscription services out there. Really enjoyed watching Hitting the High Spots with a friend of the show, the Phoenix, Jody Fleisch. Reliving the Montreal Screwjob in the Montreal Theory, and I'd recommend that to anyone who's got a few hours on their hands spare time. And as Nick mentioned, we've got a new website, which is brokenbutglorious.com. And then for myself, I'd talk about it on the show stuff, my book, A Fan's Perspective, One Man's Exploration of British Wrestling. A Fan's Perspective 2016, What a Year to Be a Fan of WWE, and A Fan's Perspective, How My Lifelong Dream Became a Nightmare, are available on paperback and Kindle on A Fan's Perspective.bigcartel.com, where they're all signed, on Kindle, on Amazon, on your local Amazon too. And yeah, that's everything really. So thank you very much for listening to the show, and we'll be back next week, as Nick said.